This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Turnaround from the Warriors. I felt, obviously, that 31-point blown lead was a... I'm sure that was embarrassing for them. I know that's something they discussed a little bit. And I just felt like you were going to see a motivated Warriors team, and Kevin Durant was going to come out. He had mentioned, it seemed like he foreshadowed that in his comments about Patrick Beverley at practice before game three. So to me, I expected the Warriors to come out and kind of lay the smack down, and that's what happened. The most surprising thing to me has probably been that game two comeback. To me, a 15-point comeback at Oracle would have been incredibly impressive and would have been something great to write about. But the fact that they came back from 31 points down, had basically a 19-minute stretch where they outscored the Warriors by 35 points. I think that was a historical anomaly. No team really ever outscores the Warriors by 35 points over any stretch. So for it to be the Clippers of all teams, I thought was something really special that night.
Where do the Clippers go from here now? They win game two in the fashion that you were just talking about, and that puts them in a position where, they can withstand getting blown out Thursday, come back tomorrow, and still have a chance to extend this series beyond five games if they can get that game tomorrow. But what haven't they done in this series that they maybe thought they could do a better job of? And what does maybe Doc Rivers have in his back pocket still to go to try and even it up tomorrow?
I think they really think they can play better on both ends. I think defensively, I'm not exactly sure how many points they're averaging, but I want to say the Warriors are averaging around like 130 points a game for this series, which is an absurd amount of points. So I think their concern really overall, I said this was going to be the biggest thing heading into the series, was the Clippers defense versus the Warriors offense. For the Clippers to have any chance of winning even a game, let alone winning two games or even trying to win the series, they were going to have to somehow shut down the Warriors offense. It really hasn't happened outside of that 19-minute stretch in game two. Outside of that, the Warriors have basically done whatever they've wanted offensively and just basically been unstoppable. So I think that is their biggest concern heading into game four. Offensively, they've had their struggles too, where especially their starting unit. So as far as adjustments in game four moving forward, I expect the Clippers are going to tweak their starting lineup. I think the most simple version of that might just be starting Jamichael Green instead of Ivica Zubac. I suggested yesterday, and this is kind of the red alert, DEFCON 5, whatever, adjustment, is starting Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. They've been their two best players in the series, and they've been killing the Warriors' bench, and even at times their starting unit when they've closed games with that lineup. But I think they got to go against the starters, because the one consistent thing I've noticed every game has been the Warriors starters, by the time the benches are starting to come in, they already have a 10-12 point lead by the time Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are coming in, or Iguodala and whoever. So to me, the Clippers starters are giving their bench such a big hole to try to climb out of that. It really took a historic effort in game two to even have a competitive game in the fourth quarter. So for me, I think the Clippers need to, I personally would probably put Ivica Zubac and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on the bench, go with Montrezl Harrell, Danilo Gallinari, Pat Beverley, Landry Shamet, and Lou, and just roll those five out. That was their best lineup after they made those trades in February. So just play your best lineup, see how it goes. And if, maybe the bench isn't as good, you have to readjust the minutes, but the starting lineup isn't getting killed. And to me, if you're down 10 to 15 points midway through the first quarter every game, you have to adjust, because that's not a winning strategy.
Jovan Buha of The Athletic joining us. He covers the Los Angeles Clippers. Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the first quarter scores here, Jovan, and the Warriors have sometimes this season not come out good at the start of games, but they've been up 9 points, 8 points, and 17 points at the end of every first quarter. I guess here was when we were talking about would Doc Rivers start Williams and Harrell, and I just, you know, obviously you know them better than me, but I said to John, I said, well, it seems to me that you still need if you keep them on the bench, you're asking your starters, hey, can you hang in there for 6-8 minutes? Give us an even game when we get our Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell in there. Because then if they can do that, well, then you're kind of playing with house money. Whereas if you start them, well, you're going to have to bring in the bench at some point anyway. I don't know. What would be the advantage, I guess, is what I'm asking
so
you.
My thing with that is sometimes I think the whole starter bench thing gets a little overblown of having your, you know, like the whole, like, oh, well, we need to keep certain guys on the bench. Like, the Warriors could do that with Andre Iguodala because they have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson starting ahead of him. But to me, the comparison, I think that kind of crystallizes this is basically, you know, if you look at the Clippers roster and ranking the players in terms of how valuable they are, how good they are, how productive they are, this is basically the equivalent of bringing Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson off the bench. And you're like, well, we're starting, you know, we have Steph and Draymond in the starting lineup, but we really think, you know, Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson are more valuable coming off the bench and playing against second units. It's like, no, the Warriors are playing their four best players in the starting lineup, and, you know, they do probably fit together better than any foursome in the league, and, you know, that's what makes the Warriors, but, like, you know, they have their deficiencies, and that's really the main reason why Trez and Lou don't start. You know, Lou is a very bad, you know, bluntly, he's a very bad defender, and then, you know, Doc has talked about that, Lou's talked about that, like, he you know, doesn't often try on defense, and that's really been what's held him back throughout his career in terms of starting. He's always been kind of that microwave scorer, six man, but really with the Clippers the last couple of years, he's transformed himself offensively. He's never shot the ball better, he's never scored more, he's never, you know, assisted more, so Lou's really transformed himself, I think, the last couple of years with the Clippers. For Trez, in fact, he's 6'7". You know, and it's hard to be a 6'7" center. And, you know, he does have those long Draymond arms, so he can play center against bigger guys, but it is a lot to, you know, ask him to protect the rim, to rebound the ball against behemoths like Andrew Bogut. If you look at them next to each other, he's much bigger than Montrezl Harrell. So I think those are really the two things that have held them back. But, you know, to get back to the Clay KD thing, it's like, at some point, you kind of just got to go with your best lineup. And, you know, those two have been the only two Clippers who've been able to score against the Warriors in all three games. You know, like, you know, Gallo had a good stretch in game two. You know, Landry had that stretch in game two. Shea's had his moments. But, like, for the most part, the Clippers have really struggled to be consistent throughout this series. The two guys that have done that, you know, consistently each of the three games have been Lou and Trez. And I think you got to go with that. You have no chance. If you're down, if those guys are coming in midway through the first of game four and the Clippers are down 10-12, the game's over, in my opinion. Like, they're not coming back from that. You know, you got to keep it close with the Warriors. You give them a 10-12-point advantage really at any point, it's hard to come back from that.
I want to talk about Gallinari. He struggled in game one, struggled in game three. He got it going a little bit as game two went on, as you mentioned. A lot of his game is isolations, as far as scoring and just his ability to knock down, you know, shots in that type of almost a one-on-one scenario. Why do you think he's struggled, and what are they going to try to do to get him going?
So I think the Warriors have really game plan for him, and I think if you look at the Clippers starting lineup, if you can take out Gallo and take out Landry Shamet, that really depletes their kind of offense. I mean, those are probably the two top offensive options in their starting lineup. And the Warriors have done a really nice job. And I asked Doc about this today at practice, and he was a little defensive, and maybe I could have worded the question better or kind of framed it a little bit differently. But I was just saying, like, for them, a big thing is getting mismatches on Gallo, because obviously usually a team will throw their best perimeter defender on him. But, you know, the Clippers will run him off a screen or run a pick and roll, whatever, to try and switch a smaller guy on him. And you put a smaller guy on Gallo, he punishes him, you know, most of the time. But with the Warriors, you know, you have KD guarding him. Well, most of the switches are, a lot of times have been Draymond or Clay or Iguodala, and all those guys are, you know, just as good, if not better than KD defensively. So, like, the Warriors have so many big perimeter guys they can put on Gallo, they can put on Shea, they can put on Landry that, you know, even I think most teams, when you're drawing switches with their perimeter guys, you can find a guy or two that you could really exploit. The Warriors are one of the few teams that really, you know, across the board have so many good perimeter defenders that it is really hard to find the exploitable one. I guess Steph is the one that you maybe want to go at, but I think Steph's underrated defensively, and they've really done a nice job of you know, keeping him out of those scenarios. So to me, I think it's just been the Warriors have really good perimeter on-ball defenders. They've been very aggressive playing off the rest of the Clippers, where, you know, when Gallo gets the ball, they're leaving the two guys on the weak side wide open. They're packing the paint. So, it's hard to drive when you've got four or five guys in the paint. I think that the Clippers need to do a better job of running him into mismatches, trying to get Steph on him, trying to get Bogut on him, and just trying to get him open. You know, I think the Clippers' offense has been very stagnant, and that's, you know, you got to give the Warriors their credit for that. But for the Clippers to have any chance, I think, to win game four and to extend the series, I think Gallo has to have a big game, has to be the third best player on the court, you know, for 48 minutes, because you know what Steph's going to do, you know what KD's going to do. If Clay's the third best guy in the series or on the court, I don't think the Clippers have a chance. I think it has to be Gallo.
Yeah, makes sense. Hey, Jovan, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Appreciate it.
All right, that's Jovan Buha. He works for The Athletic. He covers the L.A. Clippers. All right, 888-957-9570 is the number. If you want to jump in and talk about anything Jovan said, I'll also clean up your calls on the officiating. If you want to talk about how these games are being officiated and whether they're called closer in the postseason or not, we can do that. Also, Tim Roy coming up at 12:30. He's the voice of the Golden State Warriors. You are listening to Warriors This Week.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
All right, final segment. John Dickinson in Los Angeles. Matt Steinmetz in San Francisco. Tim Roy going to join us coming up in a little under 10 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on the first three games between the Warriors and the Clippers. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Steiny, let's get to a call. Who do we have on the line?
Let's go to Josh. Josh in Sunnyvale. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to challenge the thought that certain refs don't have it out for certain players. I think Scott Foster has been known to get under James Harden's skin. And I think Harden received a fine for commenting about it after the game a few months back. I think Paul George or Westbrook might have also gotten a fine for comments about him as well. Just one more thing. I looked back at a video of Game 7 against Houston for the Warriors, and there were about 9 calls throughout the game where Harden was fouled on a 3 and wasn't called. So I just wanted to put that in there and see what you guys thought about it. All right, thanks.
Thanks, Josh. Ooh, I think we got a Houston fan slip in here. Houston fan.
Well, it's funny because the Warriors have had their issues with Scott Foster, not recently, but in years past,
right.
The Warriors would always make a point of him kind of being the guy that they didn't want to see in a playoff game, but that's actually shifted, I think, over the course of the last couple of years. That was more of a 2014-15-16 issue than a 17-18-19 issue. I think those issues have shifted to Houston.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Hey, a couple things, some leftovers that I want to talk to you about regarding this series. Lou Williams. You know, the one thing that we've seen, JD, from the Warriors over this championship run is they have found a way always to counteract scorers on the other team. You know, over the years, they've turned Harden into a volume guy. They've turned Westbrook into a volume guy. And even LeBron, they turned into a volume player that first year they won the title. Why do you think they're having so much trouble with Lou Williams?
I just think he's a he's a different player. He just the way he play, the way he kind of glides, and the way he takes his shots, and I don't know. He's also under the radar.
Yeah,
I think a little bit too. I think he's a guy that you kind of forget about because he's a sixth man. And then he's in the game, and sometimes he gets rolling, hits a couple of shots before you even fully notice he's in the game, I think. But no, I mean, a terrific player, obviously the greatest bench scorer in the history of the NBA in terms of just overall points. So, I'm not sure. I just think his game is a little different because he handles it. He could shoot the three. He's good on the drive. He's mid-range. He can get to the free throw line. I mean, he's very skilled, but there's a pace to his game and the way he drives that I think is a little different from some of the other players.
You want my theory?
Yeah.
All right, here's my theory on why he's given him more trouble than other players, specifically Harden and Westbrook. I think that size... When you use Klay Thompson and Iguodala to defend Harden and Westbrook, their size really pays off. The fact that Klay's 6'7", and the fact that Iguodala's 6'6", 6'7", and they can use like their strength and height works for them when they defend Westbrook or Harden. But on a guy like Lou Williams, who's 6'2", 6'3", I think he's a little quicker than those two other guys. I think he's actually more deceptive. I think those guys go to the hole much stronger, but Lou Williams is real deceptive and crafty, and I just think Lou Williams can, as a smaller player, has kind of more of an edge over an Iguodala and Klay than those other two guys do. And that's why the one thing I was thinking about is, man, if it happened a little bit. It happened a little bit in Game 3. Curry's the guy that needs to guard Lou Williams. Because if Curry can guard him relatively well, I think that's huge then. Because he's the guy who's Lou Williams' size. I almost think in some ways Curry could be the best defender against Lou Williams.
I think that's a great point. I really do. And it also frees up some of those other players to be, you know, defending elsewhere against the Clippers, which could be somewhat of a benefit. I also think you might, if Curry gets put on Lou Williams, he might really try to take the game over at that point, and I think that can maybe make him more of a volume type scorer, because he might just look to go every time, and it's if you know he's going to look to go every time against Curry, then I think you can help off of him a little bit more easily, and you've got better defenders as the help defender. So I think you're onto something with that. I think that's a good call.
Well, the other thing too is Curry will have to be smart defensively if he's going to guard him and not get into foul trouble.
Which he can be.
Well, that's the thing. I want to ask you this. I thought Kerr with a little cheap shot saying, I trust Kevin Durant with foul trouble, but not Curry. Well, Curry's the one. Curry didn't foul out with foul trouble the other night. It was Durant who fouled out.
Well, and it's funny because he had the choice, he had the choice to leave him in or take him out, and he left them both in initially.
Right. Yes.
But then he had the choice again, and Curry picked up his fourth. Like he picked, I want to say he had it. I'd have to go back. I don't want to get too far down the, but he had a choice twice and Durant didn't pick up the fourth. Curry did. And he had to end up taking him out. I think early in the third quarter, I believe, or I may have the timing off on that, but he had a choice twice. And the first time neither picked up the third in the first half, but then the next time it happened, Curry quickly picked up a foul. He had to sub him out.
From the 925, I'm going to put you on the spot here, JD. Is Lou Williams better than Jamal Crawford?
I think he is.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think he is. Jamal Crawford's good.
Yeah.
No, I got nothing bad to say about Jamal Crawford. I think Lou Williams is better.
Well, he's better now. For sure.
Yeah, no, the question is, like, better all-time bench score. No, give me Lou.
That's a pretty good question, though. It's pretty close. And you know what? I'll take the guy that you don't want to take. That's easy. Not easy. Easier said than done, or easy to do. The turnovers were something that were rectified also in game three. And, you know, I wanted to, and we're going to have Tim Roy on here in a minute, and maybe we talk about it with Tim, or maybe we wait till after Tim. But we got Tim? All right, so we'll wait till after Tim. What's going on, Tim? Tim Roy, the voice of the Golden State Warriors. You can follow him on Twitter, at Warriors Vox, and he'll be bringing you the Warriors pregame show tomorrow at noon after Daryl the Guru Johnson and I do the Warriors live at 11. Tim, how you doing? I hope you're enjoying L.A.
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Just got back from practice, and I'm going to get ready to hang out and watch some hoop today. But like the Bay Area, it's a little cooler today than it was yesterday. But all pretty good. Warriors had a good practice and getting ready for tomorrow.
What any big news to come out of practice, or what? You know, I know Steve Kerr was talking to the media. What anything important come out of that?
Well, you know, I'll be totally candid. I was not in on that session because I had other duties.
So you
and other people I need to talk to.
Let me explain to the fans what's going on out here, because I know. So you went into practice,
right?
But you were reading your papers like you always do, and you were making your notes. So
right.
You weren't totally engaged in the practice. Then the practice did end. But you had your own professional obligations in terms of interviews that you had to do, so you were away from the pack a little bit.
Correct. I was doing some other interviews, and because we have other people who can gather that interview with Steve Kerr and with Klay Thompson, who spoke to the media today, and Draymond, there are other people that the Warriors have who will have that, and then I'll listen to those interviews a little bit later on this afternoon when the Warriors are able to post them, or R.C. Davis posted on SoundCloud. So, yeah, I had a couple of other interviews I had to do. But I think the team was in pretty good spirits. I think the general gist was they're not overly concerned with the early start time. I know Klay Thompson told the media that he said that it's basically the same start time for both teams. So it should not be a factor in tomorrow's game. I think, to me, there was a good look of like a quiet confidence today after practice that the team, I think, thinks it's ready to go.
I just asked JD this question. I'm going to ask it to you. As the Warriors have, you know, they've had success in the past against a Harden, a Westbrook, even a LeBron in terms of turning them into volume shooters. Why do you think they're struggling or struggled in two of the three games with Lou Williams? Why is he different than those guys, do you think?
You know, he's a little different because he has a little Harden, you know, Harden's great with his triple threat, and then he gets into his moves, and he gets his arms down below your arms and comes up and draws a foul. Williams is different because he kind of starts and stops.
Yeah.
So he'll start a pick and roll sequence with Montrezl Harrell, then he'll kind of raise up a little bit like he's stopping, and then bang, he can go right back down and keep the dribble alive, and I think that's the part I think that's really difficult, is that he can kind of shift gears on you really quickly. I mean, he can go from
full
blast to the basket from a standstill in an instant, and not a lot of players have that. Some need that running start to get going. He doesn't need that. He's got a little burst. And, in fact, one of the guys that helped him with that after his knee surgery was Kenny Atkinson, the coach of the Brooklyn Nets. He was an assistant in Atlanta at the time. And he said that Atkinson helped him rebuild his game after his knee surgery, and that he's forever in his debt.
Tim, I want to go back to the start time, because the one thing, and I'm with Clay, you know, it's the same thing for both teams, but the Clippers do regularly play 12:30 games in the afternoon at Staples Center, because a lot of times there's two events in a day there with the LA Kings or something going on at night. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be forgetting an obvious one, but have the Warriors had an early start this entire season like that in anywhere? I don't think they have.
I don't think they have this year. I don't think there was a matinee. You know, usually the two or three places you can get a matinee are Clippers, Knicks, Raptors. Those are the three that, you know, historically do a lot of matinee games. And I don't think the Warriors had a matinee for any of those this year. I mean, they've played, you know, day games here in L.A. in the past. They've played, you know, matinees in Toronto a lot. But I think you're right. I don't think we had a real day game this year at all.
Tim,
yeah, it can be weird. I know they practiced a little bit earlier today, and, you know, to maybe get in the flow or maybe prevent last night from getting away from some of the players. I know they had the day off, obviously yesterday, but I mean that's something that I think can be a little tricky the first time you go through it. And look, I mean the way the schedule's shaken out. You know, the Warriors are in line to maybe have another one next week against the Rockets and maybe even another one on Mother's Day to open a conference final series should they continue to keep moving here.
Yeah, you know, I think for tomorrow, I think the fact that they did have an early practice, I think, was in line with getting guys used to getting up early and not sleeping in. You know, the average NBA, you know, shoot-around's at 10 or 11 usually. So it wasn't totally abnormal. But it was kind of like a shoot around to kind of get them thinking, okay, you're going to have to get up early tomorrow morning because, you know, the buses are going to come quickly. And so I think that was partly by design today to make it like a shoot around. And so I think that's part of the mindset. I think they're trying to get them to be locked in. I think they will. I think, you know, after what happened in game two, I really can't see them not being focused for this game.
Tim, I got to ask you about Bogut. I'm looking at the box score. 25 minutes. I mean, that's a lot for Bogut. Are you, now with Cousins out, you know, it's funny. We talk about the playoffs being kind of good for the Warriors because there's no back-to-backs. You know, there's always going to be a day off between games. But I was looking at Bogut's schedule from Australia. And, you know, they have a lot of 4 or 5 days off between games. And I wonder, if we get down to every other game with the Warriors, do you have concern that Bogut can give them consistency in that case?
Yeah, I think that there's always a little bit of concern when you're going every other day. But I think for right now, I think he's fine. The other part about Andrew right now is that he's in such great shape.
Yeah.
I mean, he really is. He and both Draymond Green are in great shape. And I think so for the moment, I don't think there's any concern about the minutes and about breaking down. Also, you know, don't forget, how many games did he play when you looked at the schedule in Australia?
Oh, 28.
Okay, so Think about that. He hasn't played the full season. He's like in mid-season form right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, not only did he play 28 games with lots of rest, but he didn't have the 82-game schedule. So I think he'll be fine.
Tim Roy, our guest here, the voice of the Warriors. You'll hear Tim tomorrow on 95.7 The Game with the call of Warriors-Clippers game number 4 at Staples Center as our coverage beginning in the early, early morning tomorrow. But Tim will be by along with Jim Barnett on the call tomorrow, 12 o'clock pregame after Steiny and Guru, 12:30 tip-off here on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned the quiet confidence about the Warriors today at practice. The one thing we were talking about earlier, Tim, is just the benefit of winning tomorrow, just in the fact that you can then come home, get a day off, practice, play the game on Wednesday, and maybe this series over in 5 versus having to come back. Not to be Johnny's schedule with all of my questions today, but there really is a significant benefit for them winning tomorrow and then winning in Game 5 compared to getting in that trap where maybe you have to go back and forth again and then possibly play another game to start the next series even as early as Sunday. The benefit is right there in front of them to get this thing done and make up for the slip-up that they had in Game 2.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. I think if you take care of business and win these next two, you know, at the very earliest, you're starting in the weekend. You know, and who knows, maybe Utah can find a solution to Houston and force that series to go a little bit deeper. But I think it's a definite good point because, you know, if you can get yourself a couple of extra days rest, you know, you've got some veteran teams played deep, you know, the last 4 years, and that, as we know, it takes a toll. And so I think in this case, you know, it'd be great to get this series over to get ready for the next one, because whether it's Houston or Utah, that's going to be a different series.
Tim, before I let you go, I got to ask you about Looney. You know, I'm surprised that he's playing for whatever he's playing for this year, a million and change. I thought somebody would at least give him a couple million a year and at least make the Warriors match. Steve Kerr said the other day, we need this guy back. Do you think other teams have started to figure out that, you know, this guy ain't bad, or do you think he's still under the radar? And it almost feels to me like other teams must think, well, you take him off the Warriors, he wouldn't be that good. Because I can't figure out why a lot of teams wouldn't want a kid like Looney.
Next question. Oh, sorry, I just had to do that. That was my Russell Westbrook impression.
Oh, I got it.
I think, in fact, that Kaval was one of the guys I spoke with today, and he's really relaxed. He's very confident in his jump shot. He'll be part of our pregame show tomorrow. I think there is a kind of a dilemma for general managers, if you will, with Kevon, because I think a lot of them look at him and say, you know, well, he's getting wide open dunks and shots because of Curry and Durant and all that. On the other hand, I think the fact that you can see that he has confidence now in that mid-range, and that's going to open up his game a little bit, and that he's a pretty, you know, good, solid player. You know, he rarely makes a mistake in coverage, rarely makes a mistake, you know, on the floor. And so I think there will be some interest in Kevon this year, just simply because of the steps that he has taken and the fact that he's getting better and better. But I think, you know, like Steve Kerr, I think it would be very important for the Warriors to retain him because, you know, he's a good, smart big. He's going to play a long time. He's low maintenance, and he's getting, you know, better each season. Each season he's coming back a little bit better.
Yeah, see, that's what I get at is, you know, to me, the way the game's being played, the way the game's going, I almost look at Looney as like he's a specialist that a lot of players don't have that specialty. And I'm actually talking about the defensive end, his ability to, you know, guard off the screen and roll smaller players. I mean, that's valuable these days.
Oh, absolutely it's valuable. And the fact that, you know, he's an intelligent player. You know, I think, you know, he played some point guard in high school, and that forces you to think the game through. And so I think that, you know, when you put him out there and you get a switch, you know, you don't feel like, you know, he's totally on an island or on skates out there. And so even if the guy scores, he's working harder to score over Kevon than he might over another big. And he's got some value now. He's really, you know, his stock, as they would say, has grown and has risen. And it's going to be a very, and you know what? He deserves it. He's worked his tail off to come back from those hip surgeries to be a good player in the NBA. And I think he's got a long and bright future.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tim. And he's also, you know, you can tell he fits into the locker room too. They all have these different personalities. He's a little bit quiet and that's what it takes to make up a good team.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Yeah. He's all right, guys.
Yeah.
We'll,
thanks,
talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Tim Roy.
See you tomorrow,
voice.
Tim.
Tim Roy, the voice of the Golden State Warriors. And you can follow him on Twitter at Warriors Vox. Tim Roy. He'll have the call at 12:30 tomorrow. Darryl the Guru Johnson, myself, and JD will be part of the Warriors live show starting at 11 a.m., and then we'll turn it over to Tim at noon, tip off again at 12:30. Anything Tim said, JD, that caught your attention or made you think a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the part about the quiet confidence, because I think there's times where the Warriors know. And I wasn't sure going into Game 3. I really wasn't, and I think I said that to you guys. I thought they were a little bit vulnerable heading into Game 3, just the way Game 2 ended and the way, you know, they were kind of looking around at each other, you know, as things were evaporating. But it's that quiet confidence and them kind of knowing, all right, we can end this series tomorrow. Basically, you know, effectively, because you go home and then you put them away on Wednesday. So, and again, I just keep coming back to there is a significant benefit to winning tomorrow because it just sets up the rest of the week in an extremely favorable way leading into the next series if you're going to end up playing maybe your toughest series of the playoffs against the Houston Rockets.
You know, you said something about what we haven't seen yet, and maybe we won't see it, but the one thing that I shouldn't say we usually, but often we'll see it in a playoff series is you get back to the Underdogs Arena, and the home, or I should say the favorite, has to weather a storm. We haven't seen anything like that, and you were talking about it earlier in the show. A lot of times in a game four like this, or maybe a game three if it's even 1-1, you expect the Clippers to come out with their hair on fire, and the Warriors kind of have to stabilize the game a little. But it was actually the other way in game three. The Warriors jumped on the Clippers. But that is the one thing that I'm also thinking too, JD, is we haven't seen the Clippers feed off the home crowd emotion to try to put the Warriors on their heels early in a game.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason the Warriors avoided that in game three was because the Clippers don't have a home court advantage. And, you know, I think that's where the emotion of being in a building where it's very difficult to play can have a factor, you know, play a role in that and be a factor in that. And the Clippers, you know, there was a nice vibe in that building, but the Warriors are very comfortable playing in Staples Center. And there were a lot of Warrior fans there. I mean, that wasn't like if you're 1-1 and you're going to Portland, or you're 1-1 and you're going to Oklahoma City, or you're 1-1 and you're going to Utah, you know, and the fans there are thinking, hey, might be a shot at an upset in this series if you can get that game. So I think the Warriors, again, I think that's actually another added benefit of playing the Clippers in the first round, is the fact that, yeah, there's no real home court advantage, and you can just kind of play your game. And if anything, you start playing well, there's going to be a ton of Warriors fans in the building that are going to, you know, make you feel good and have a lot of energy. So I think it's almost the best of all worlds. But the one thing I will leave open and on the table that I mentioned earlier, Steiny, is just that fact that, yeah, the Clippers just haven't had that hot game yet where they've just played a great game. And if that happens and the Warriors aren't making shots, hey, they could win, and if they win, all of a sudden now it's 2-2 instead of 3-1 because of what happened in game two.
There have been suggestions that maybe you start Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, and you know, we heard Jovan Buha, who covers the Clippers, even say he thought that may be within the realm of possibility. I got to tell you, Guru mentioned that midweek, and I was, you know, I think it's preposterous. I thought it was preposterous. I'm like, well, why would you all of a sudden start Lou Williams, who hasn't started all year but for one game when Patrick Beverley was hurt? But you know what? Maybe, and I'm getting into this, Clippers down 8, down 9, and down 17 in the last three games at the end of the first quarter. Maybe the Clippers can't have that game where they come out with their hair on fire and are making shots left and right, because Williams isn't on the floor, and he's got to be for them to play like that. So as much as I do think it's kind of, it sounds desperate, you know what? If you come out with Lou Williams as a starter, and I don't know if you would Harrell or not, you have a better chance of coming out on fire, I guess, is one way to look at it.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think if they do anything, it's going to be the first part. And this was something I think I mentioned to you via text during game three. And Jovan had mentioned this too. I would strongly consider just starting Jamichael Green at the five, and just letting him get out there and run around and be an athlete and just go small immediately.
Right.
And because Zubats has been, and I know he ended up with 18 and 15 in game four, but it was as hollow an 18 and 15 as you'll ever see. And but if Zubats, you know, if Zubats can't get you through that first 5-6 minutes, well, then let Jamichael Green do it, and then maybe you play Zubats in another spot of the game if you need him. But that's the one move that I actually think could happen. I don't think he's going to change Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell and throw them into the starting lineup, because the other thing is, well, who are you taking out? And I know Jovan Buha said, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but you then defensively, I think you're losing a lot, you know, and not that the Clippers have been great defensively. They haven't. They've been terrible defensively for the most part in this series. But if you take out Gilgeous-Alexander, you lose some length. And, you know, I'm not sure you want to do that at the beginning of the game. But, you know, and down 2-1 is also not necessarily panic mode if you're Doc Rivers, although you know, it's definitely a must-win game for L.A.
Well, and the other thing is Gilgeous Alexander started 73 of 82 games. You know, if he were in his fourth year, maybe you think about doing that. A rookie, maybe he's not going to handle it well. I don't know. Maybe he would. I also think that, yeah, I mean, to me, a real key to this series, I mean, Shamet's got to be a threat at least. I mean, he's had two games where he's been absolutely ineffectual, a 1-for-6 and a 1-for-5. And even in the win, he wasn't great, but for the big shot he made, that kid can shoot. They've got to turn him into a threat. He's at least got to be a better floor spacer than he's been, but they're not getting anything out of him, and he's actually the one player on that. He's probably their best shooter, and you know, he's not getting enough shots.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that too, and I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see the adjustments that are made. I mean, is there anything the Warriors need to do differently in your mind? I guess roll it out, right? Just let it rip.
You know, I mean, it sounds goofy, but to me, it's really about how's Durant going to play. I mean, that's the biggest. Like, I don't think they need to make any adjustments. I just think Durant needs to come out and, you know, play the game and
do it again.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, JD, going down some other series real quick. We got about five more minutes. Denver, San Antonio, your Spurs are up 2-1. Looks like Popovich might have a little magic up his sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, they got a good matchup, obviously, getting Denver, who has struggled at the end of the year and may not be ready to even win a single round. Obviously, a must-win game for the Nuggets. Well, not really a must-win game because they do have home court advantage. So they you know, you could lose tonight and be in trouble in that series and then still wind up, go home, get it to 3-2, have a chance to win game 6 on the road. Not ideal. But, yeah, Denver's in a position where they got to steal one. I'm not really surprised, but I also think Denver's still got something left in the tank to fight through and get a win. I think Denver is a little bit better than people have given them credit for as the season has gone on. And I, you know what? I'm gonna say something that may sound a little crazy. I think Denver is still going to win the series.
I do, 7. Too. I'm picking. Yeah, I do, too. I refuse to believe that Mike Malone can't rub off on those guys somehow in terms of sense of urgency and playing with toughness, et cetera.
I just got a feeling they're going to win. They're going to end up getting one in San Antonio and winning this series. It just, I don't know, gut feeling might be crazy, but I think Denver still wins this series against San Antonio.
Let me tell you what I've learned in the postseason, that there are too many teams out there that have no chance. And you can't win if you don't have an offense. You can't. I'm watching Damian Lillard take shots from 32 feet. I'm watching Kyrie Irving simply take over games in the last 4 minutes for Boston. You see what KD can do here. You've seen Steph Curry do it countless times. James Harden can do it. If you don't have one of those guys, you're done. You have no chance. I'm watching Utah. They cannot score. Donovan Mitchell's a great player, but he's too high volume. He's not efficient enough. You look at Indiana, I know that they don't have Oladipo. That team can't win. Brooklyn, they can't win. Orlando, they can't win. It's an offensive league, and if you don't have offensive players, you ain't going to win, JD. That's my feeling.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on the money with that, and you know, the East is, you know, the cream has risen back to the top in the East. Everybody's now back in control that you would expect to be in control among that top four. And I'm interested to see how the Rockets play in Salt Lake City. And I'm also interested in Oklahoma City, Portland. I mean, that thing looks like it might be destined to go the distance right now with, you know, two distinct home court advantages in Oklahoma City getting back on track last night.
Yeah, I feel like Portland's going to win that series for the reason I just stated, and that is, you know, Lillard and McCollum are phenomenal offensive players. Westbrook and Paul George, really good offensive players. I just think the Portland guys are a little more efficient, and that's going to be the difference in the series. But that's just a prediction. All right, JD, that's going to do it. I will talk to you tomorrow before the Warriors-Clippers game 4, which starts at 12:30. For Wes Mills, for Gabe Osler, for JD, thanks for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.